Coming to you live from Never Never Land, it's the Hand Plus Podcast, where each week I, Joe Fricke, and my co-host Tristan Mayer break down this week in streaming. We watch what we can, try to find things that, you know, smaller stuff that people may not know about, and kind of recommend things. Slowly, more and more, the last few months there hasn't been really much to watch, but now Tristan and I are realizing, hey, there's more out there. So it's going to be probably slowly through the next month or so, a little less news and a little more actual things we've watched. But yeah, we also keep people up to date on the news, maybe a trailer dropped or some information dropped, and we like to keep people up to date. So if you have, you know, your streaming services and, you know, it's hard to keep up to date, maybe you just really don't have time to keep up with streaming news, but you have time, you know, you have an hour commute or something, or maybe you got a 30-minute commute, listen to us on the way to work and listen to us on the way home, and you can kind of be up to date and maybe get some recommendations to watch as you and your family wind down for the evening. So, Tristan, I'm going to ask you the question I ask you every week. How was your week in streaming?
Yeah, for the last few weeks, it's been the same answer, too. You know, it's been kind of a weak week, kind of a slow week, but for once, I felt like this was a pretty big week, you know. Feels like we're finally ramping up into that early summer season almost, you know, like the weather's starting to get good outside. It's almost like spring weather and starts to look like people are finally like amping up their releases, you know. So I have a lot to talk about that I watched, and there's a lot coming up in the next like couple of days and next week or two that is going to be really exciting to talk about too. So yeah, it's a stacked episode this week between news and releases. We got finally a big full episode for you guys this week of the Hand Plus. Almost called the other name, you know.
So, and also at the end of the show, we're going to do our Mount Rushmore of time travel movies, in accordance, I believe, with 65 is coming out this week in theater. So, which is apparently a time travel movie. I don't think we quite know. Is it a time travel movie or human aliens coming to Earth 65 million years ago? But I think it's a time travel movie. So with that, we're doing a Mount Rushmore of time travel movies that are currently streaming. So, Tristan, let's kick us off with some news, starting with HBO Max. The Last of Us, Episode 8, gets 8.1 million viewers, which is up 74% from the premiere. I still have not surpassed about the first 35 minutes of the premiere. Usually when, because it's not my fiance's type of show, so usually I'm only able to watch it or try to watch it after she goes to bed, but around that time I start to get tired, and I'm like, I'm too tired to watch this. So I'm going to try to finish it. I think the next episode's the finale, right?
I believe so. We might be one left, but it's definitely towards the end. I'm going to check as you're talking, but yeah, for sure.
All right, so I don't think I'm going to make it to the finale, but obviously this is going to go to season two, and you have the guarantee that I am going to make it to season two of The Last of Us. But obviously great numbers. I think at this point we can feel confident that if the makers of the show want a season three, we're going to get a season three.
Yeah, that's where my mind's at right now, because this is a two-story game, you know, it's a part one and a part two, and they've said even recently that they don't really have plans for a part three. They haven't really thought about where that story is going to go or anything like that. So I'm curious, this certainly is going to mean they're going to build out The Last of Us in some way. I'm hoping that they keep this as a two-part, maybe three-part show, but then expand outward. You know, I could see them being like Last of Us spinoffs announced within the next year, you know, before even season two comes out. I could see them kind of setting up maybe a Last of Us movie on HBO Max, kind of somehow ways to expand and build out that world. But yeah, I'm wondering how they respond to this, because a lot of shows are getting canceled by HBO Max, and here they have this show that's a huge, huge hit for them. And to see the numbers go up between the premiere and like the middle of the season, that's a big accomplishment for any show. So yeah, I'm really curious, a little bit nervous, but mostly excited to see what they do with this big success out of this IP that I love so much.
My question for you, as someone who hasn't watched the show, but I see reactions on Twitter, I see people talking. People, even if there's an episode that doesn't focus on Pedro Pascal, like an episode he may not even be in, people love and people are like, wow, this is incredible, this is amazing. I gotta feel Pedro Pascal, he's looking at this, he's looking at The Mandalorian, and he's even said recently in an interview, he'll play The Mandalorian until they stop writing episodes. He wants to be in movies. I feel like there's gonna hit a point where he just doesn't want to do both shows anymore. And so do you think there's a chance, like, hey, he does season one, he does season two, and then he kind of steps back and maybe he pops in for, like, one or two episodes a season, but there's just a different story they focus on in this world?
Yeah, I can see them doing that, kind of changing the focus. I will say the second game is Ellie is the main character for the second game, you know? Joel is present in the narrative, but it's definitely Ellie's story, so I could see Pedro Pascal stepping back in season two and being more of a supporting character compared to the leading role for Bella Ramsey. I could see that being a balance. And especially Mandalorian, you know, he's not necessarily on set all the time, you know? So I could see him balancing both of those by being a lead, kind of, but while still being able to kind of play the sidelines and do his movies here and there, because I love Pedro Pascal. I don't want to see him doing just these two shows for the next couple of years. You know, I want to see him do some goofier, funnier projects like Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. I thought it was so funny and so loose in that compared to some of the stuff he's doing here. So, yeah, I'm hoping that this is a good sign for everybody involved, you know?
Yeah, I you know, I'm a fan of The Mandalorian. I feel like I'm going to be a fan of The Last of Us when I watch it. And I, even myself, I wouldn't want him to be locked in. The one thing I'm nervous about, though, as far as his time, is as the Mandalorian moves on, I feel like the story is going to lend to him not wanting to wear his helmet as much. I feel like it would go against his character if he wore his helmet so much. So I feel like the plan would be for him to wear his helmet less and less and for Pedro Pascal to actually be on set more and more. So
I definitely think that's a problem too. But I do think in the end, the focus is probably going to be on Mandalorian, just from judging the storylines or where this goes. I don't think Joel is necessarily going to be the leading focus of the second season. So, yeah, definitely, you know, for Pedro Pascal, this is definitely his moment. You know, we've given him MVP so many times, but he's got to get, like, MVP of the month at this point. If not, he's already going for MVP of the year for me, and it's only, what, March?
Someone else is going to have to come out and crush it for him to beat that. Some other HBO Max news. Clancy Brown, who people may know as kind of the lead prison guard in Shawshank Redemption. He's the voice of Mr. Krabs. He has multiple voice roles in the Star Wars universe. He even has a live-action role in The Mandalorian. He is cast as Salvatore Moroni in the Penguin series. This is not his first foray into the DC universe. He was also the voice of Lex Luthor in a lot of the animated projects in the 90s and early 2000s. Tristan,
it's a multiverse, Joe.
Yeah, Tristan, what are your thoughts on this casting for Sal? And for anyone who doesn't know, he's kind of like a top early mob boss in, you know, Batman lore. He's kind of usually one of the first top mob bosses, and then he's kind of taken out by others as time moves on. He's played by Eric Roberts in The Dark Knight. But Tristan, yeah, what are your thoughts on this casting?
Yeah, I believe it was last week or the week before I mentioned some of the early Batman animated movies that I watched, and I mentioned Year One and Long Halloween, and those are both what I imagine they're going to be drawing from for the show, and I love the casting. Clancy Brown's a great actor. I think it's a fun DC connection, but it's not one of those ones that's going to be distracting. No. You know, it'd be weird if it was like, you know, Gene Hackman comes into play. So, you know, it would be obviously, but it would be weird if it was like a recognizable face, someone who actually played Lex Luthor, but this will be easy to look over, and he's a great performance too, a great addition to the cast. Colin Farrell, I saw some pictures came out of him on set in the last couple of days, and he looks great in the costume, and I'm really excited to see what they do with this. So they can borrow that aesthetic from the Batman and really dig into that crime, like that mob story, that kind of rise and fall you mentioned, kind of like, oh, you inevitably you come to power, but then somebody comes around and takes you down again, and it's kind of like the Godfather story within Gotham. So I think that could be awesome if they dive into that in this show. So I can't wait to see how they explore that. You know, we've talked about Last of Us and how they're going to expand that IP into something big, and they had the Batman, so now they're trying to see how they're going to expand that IP into something big, especially as James Gunn has his own DC stuff going on. So, yeah, I love adding huge talent to this kind of stuff. It only makes it more and more exciting, you know. The cast for this is becoming more and more stacked, and I think that makes it feel more and more legit. Like, it's one thing to get one recognizable name on your show, but when you start filling even the supporting cast with actual character actors and good performers, it's a good sign for the show.
Yeah, I definitely could see Penguin being like the Andor of the DC television shows, where this is very much feels like a HBO Max level show just set in the DC Comics world. I don't really like, we're probably not going to see very much mystical stuff. This is going to be a show about mobsters in one of the most corrupt cities in the world. It just happens to take place in the DC universe.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how they do the aesthetic of it, and I'm loving the casting.
All right, and the last bit of news here for HBO Max, Barry is ending after season 4, and that starts April 16th. I've not watched it. It seems like a show I would like. If you don't know what it is, Bill Hader is a hitman, and he goes to acting school. And that's all I kind of really know about it. I know Henry Winkler is in it. He's won, I believe, some Emmys for his for his role in the show. But Tristan, have you watched Barry? What are your thoughts on Barry?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it ending?
I love Barry. All three seasons so far have been just like top tier television. Some of the best shows HBO Max has made. You know, people know the show and it gets awards, but I feel like it's kind of a quiet hit. You know, it doesn't get talked about the same way that House of the Dragon does, but I feel like it's on the level of like a Better Call Saul type of show, where it's just a incredible performance from a comedic actor in this dramatic role, but it's also bringing in his comedic talent. You know, the irony of him being in acting and trying to pursue that career while also being a mass murderer, a hitman. You know, that's kind of just really inherently funny in some parts, and they find a lot of great, great humor and dark humor in the show. So if you think it sounds really serious and really dark, it has dark moments for sure. It has dark plot lines, but it's definitely a dark comedy. And I love the way it blends those two tones in his relationships and things like that. So I'm definitely looking forward to next season. They ended this on a really big cliffhanger last season. So I definitely know, you know, the way it ended, you kind of feel like you're going towards the end of the season and the story. You know what I mean? So when you announce that it's the final season, I'm not that surprised considering where they left us. There's only so much, so long you can go on. You know, it's similar to like Dexter, where it's like, how long can a cop be a serial killer and before he either gets caught or it becomes ridiculous that he's not been caught, you know? And Barry's reached that point where it's like, okay, how long can this character get away with this reasonably before it's not fun to watch anymore? And I think they've perfectly hit that balance, and I'm kind of glad they're ending it, to be honest. You know, I'm hating to watch a show go, but I love when a show gets the chance to end, especially when so many shows are being canceled right now. I think it's really, it's honestly a sigh of relief when you see your show getting a final season for me, because that's a sign that the writers had a chance to wrap it up, give the story an ending, and might not get as much as you wanted. You might not have as much time as you would have loved, but you're actually getting to see the end of the story, and that's a really great thing for a show like this that's so character-focused and narrative-focused. You don't want to just have it end, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it would kill basically any rewatchability if it ended on a cliffhanger, or it just kind of, maybe it wasn't a cliffhanger, but you could tell the writers had more to do, but the HBO was just like, no, we're not making any more.
Yeah, I definitely highly recommend this. When it comes out, I'm probably going to be covering it week to week, if not, you know, not in detail perhaps, but I'll be mentioning how good the episodes are each time I watch them, because yeah, this is a show everybody's got to watch, and it's a big hit. I wish it was getting the numbers that The Last of Us is getting, because it's better than that show, to be honest.
Oh, wow. All right. And the last bit of HBO Max here. You watched the show, I believe, last week, but you were off last week, Search Party. So what are your thoughts on Search Party?
Yeah, Search Party, I was kind of on the hunt because I mentioned Poker Face on Peacock, and I was loving Poker Face, the kind of mystery tone of it, and I was looking for something that might be kind of similar, and this was kind of similar. It's an HBO Max original. I was kind of excited. I was like, oh, look, I can finally cover a new HBO Max show, and then I realized it ended last year, so I guess not. But I got to talk about the show to get today. It's starring Alia Shawkat, who you would know as maybe from Arrested Development, who's this leading character here. She kind of has like a Lena Dunham from Girls type of character, where she's kind of this aloof 20-something, not really with much of a direction in her life, and her and her friends are just kind of like these self-absorbed 20-somethings on the verge of adulthood, but not quite fully there. And then one of their former college classmates suddenly vanishes, and they put it upon themselves to become the search party to go and find this college classmate, and it follows kind of the spiraling misunderstandings of all of their relationships and how this ties into all of these conspiracies you would never have guessed. And it's kind of existential and weird and fun. It honestly feels like if you took the cast of Girls and put them into like a murder mystery scenario and all the kind of weird realities that would come out of that. So I definitely recommend it. I realized, I think it was like on Prime for a season, then it was on HBO Max for a season. And now it eventually has ended at just last year, but I'm not quite through it yet, but I'm really enjoying it so far. I think there's 4 or 5 seasons right now, so I can't wait to get through all of them. I'm in the middle, right at the beginning of the 3rd season right now.
All right, and I will just say I learned 2 minutes ago that Alia Shawkat and Tatiana Maslany are not the same person.
Not the same person, no.
No, they are not. All right, so that wraps up HBO Max and moves us over to Amazon Prime, the big, powerful streaming giant that they are. They're not really. They just have a shit ton of money. So first off, news I forgot to put in our document here, but that Tristan sent me earlier. It looks like HBO Max is going, or not HBO Max, sorry, Amazon Prime is going to be streaming an NFL game free on Black Friday. So a little bit changed to the NFL schedule, and that's going to be a game on Black Friday. So I'm curious Are we only going to be getting two games on Thanksgiving, and they're going to move a Thanksgiving day, like maybe the 4 o'clock or noon slot on Thanksgiving to Black Friday? Or let's be honest here, they're just going to take one of the Sunday games and move it to Friday, which I'm sure the teams will love because NFL teams love playing on Thursday and having short week and risk and increasing their chance of injury. So yay for that. Some other news, Cocaine Bear, which is currently, you know, in theaters, it came out a week ago, will be coming to Amazon Prime 1 week from today, March 7th, 2023. So as of March 14th, 2023, you will be able to stream Cocaine Bear on Amazon Prime.
That's impressive. That's kind of terrible for the theater. Like, that movie made a lot of money. I'm surprised that it's going right to Prime. You know, that's a pretty quick turnaround. I would imagine, you know, Universal is taking, like, what, like a 3 week window at that point. That's pretty bad, especially for a movie that's making a lot of money, right?
But yeah. I wonder if, like, there's going to be a thing in contracts from now on. Well, not from now on, but, like, in the future, potentially, for movies like Cocaine Bear, where they have a number. Like, okay, if it hits $45 million, say, opening weekend, then it'll stay, you know, it won't come to Amazon Prime for X amount of weeks. But if it hits above 45, you know, if it's under 45 million, then okay, yeah, we'll just add it to Amazon Prime 2 weeks later, because obviously this movie's not going to make money in the theaters, and at least we can add it to Amazon Prime. But like, I'm probably wasn't going to see it in theaters, but like, if I had plans, like if me and my friends were like, hey, let's go see Cocaine Bear this weekend, I'd see this news and I'd be like, I'll just wait like 4 days and watch it at home for free. Like,
I will say that I'm not sure your news is accurate on here, Joe, because I would imagine Cocaine Bear would be going to Peacock and not to Prime as a universal release. But
that's what I thought was Amazon Prime.
Especially, that's a quick turnaround. That's pretty quick. But yeah, either way, I like the movie a lot. And whether it's streaming or on demand, I think you should check it out. But probably check it out in the theater. You know, it's one of those movies that's maximalist and crazy, and it's exactly what you think it's going to be. The bear does. He does cocaine and he eats a bunch of people, and it's as gory and as fun and as crazy as that premise kind of seems like it should be. It goes about as far as you think it's going to go, not quite as far as you might have hoped it was going to go, but it hits the level you want it to hit.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen it. I'm trying to find where I saw the news on it. I can't find it, so maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I saw earlier today when I was looking for news to add into the show. So potentially, hey, March 14th, look at Cocaine Bear on Amazon Prime. Other news, we have John Cena, Awkwafina, and Simu Liu have been cast in Grand Theft Lotto, which is going to be directed by Paul Feig, and it's set in the near future where there's a grand lottery that has one catch. If you kill the winner by sundown, you can claim their prize. So I feel like fun action adventure. My guess, based on this cast, Awkwafina wins the money, and either Simu Liu is sent to protect them or is attacking them for the money, or John Cena is hired to protect Awkwafina or is the one trying to get her money. One of them is protecting her, one of them is defending her, very much like a Terminator-style situation.
I'll say this is probably one you're going to be watching or reviewing, and not me, Joe. I've seen Red Notice enough times, you know. I don't need another Red Notice. I don't need another Gray Man. And this looks like it's another Red Notice Gray Man. It's going to be a huge budget action movie with some pretty recognizable faces. To give it some quips, you know. And it's going to be a bunch of another Netflix money burner, yep. What it looks like to me, Joe.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I don't really care to see it. But, you know, it's got some big names, and I thought people might be interested. So I'm like, let me drop that in the news. You did watch a couple things on Amazon Prime this week. The Consultant, which I watched the first 10 minutes of and then fell asleep because I started it at 11 o'clock. What are your thoughts on The Consultant?
This is a pretty interesting show so far. Joe watched the first bit of it, so he knows the basic premise. It's this big tech company that develops like games for the phone, you know, mobile games, and their leader dies suddenly and mysteriously, and they think the company's going to collapse and fall, but all of a sudden in walks Christoph Waltz, playing the typical weirdo, strange Christoph Waltz, who happens to have a contract putting him in charge of this company. He doesn't even really know anything about phone games or tech, but he is this extreme level intense CEO, you know, to the dot, to the level of terrifying and torturous level of intensity. You know, he takes the job very, very seriously, and it's a thriller about people within this company trying to uncover the truth about Christoph Waltz's character, what his true end goals are, and there's a lot of pretty unexpected twists and turns around, so it's a pretty fun kind of mystery box thriller within the workplace. You know, if you're a fan of like Severance, I think you would kind of get a kick out of this. It's not nearly as good as Severance, but it has that similar vibe to it. I think it's mostly worth watching for Christoph Waltz's performance. Like, the drama and the story is fine, but you're watching it to see like the next crazy scene where Christoph Waltz comes in and does something weird or like goes on some speech about something, you know, and I think it's fun in that way, you know, especially when we're watching the rise of like these crazy tech billionaires like Elon Musk and all of the crazy conversation around Elon Musk and the way he talks online, the way he treats his employees. And I think this very much feels like in the times in that way, you know. So worth checking out. Seems like a fun show. I don't really know if it's going to go anywhere mystery wise, but it's a solid watch. And while Prime is kind of desperate for stuff to watch, I definitely think this is one of their better shows.
All right. Yeah, I might check that out if I got time. I got a lot of stuff I'm trying to watch right now. And I know you also watched Daisy Jones and the Six miniseries on HBO. I know, I'm pretty sure it stars Riley Kogue. I don't know how to say her name, which is Elvis Presley's granddaughter.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because they have Elvis music within the show. It's a musical show, so you get to see kind of, you know, the spirit of Elvis live on in a similar way to that. You know, it's based off of a book that I have read, so I'm kind of excited to see how they adapt the book. The book was, you know, all right, but the show is about as all right as the book was. It's about halfway through on the miniseries. They drop like the first three, I think, at once or two at once, and then they're going to be dropping them week to week after that. But so far, it's not too bad. It's set in the 1970s, and it follows this rock band on the rise, and it's similar to like Almost Famous, a very, very similar premise to Almost Famous. You know, you're following this woman as she follows around this rock band at the height of their, well, at the height of their kind of push to stardom. They're not famous, but they're like at that moment where they're breaking, you know, mm-hmm. and yeah. You're following that moment. So if you're a fan of Almost Famous, I think you'll like this. I think what holds us back from something like Almost Famous is it's very polished. It's very like digital and clean. You know, your shots look more like Old Navy flyers than they do, you know, a 70s music video, you know, so it's a little bit boring visually. So I'm not quite sure this is something that's going to hit the mainstream or the big leagues here. You know, it's not going to be going for any of the awards or anything like that, that I was kind of wondering if they would go for it like this, you know, a musical biopic type of thing set in a period piece. That could be something that they would push for the Emmys, but does not seem to be going that route. So I can't say I fully recommend this, but it's not so bad so far. And if you're a fan of that era, a fan of that music, you're going to get a lot out of this. So I recommend watching it if you're specifically a fan of that time period or that, you know, genre or that kind of movie, like Almost Famous. But if you're not, this is probably not going to win you over.
All right. Yeah, I love Almost Famous. So I'll definitely, you comparing it to that makes me want to definitely check it out. It's one of my favorite movies. So I will be checking out the show. I was about to watch it. I was trying to find stuff to watch. And then I saw that you already had it on the document. I'm like, okay, we already have it covered, so I'll wait. And I think I just watched something else. I should have just watched it so we both could have talked about it. But
I think you would like this a lot, especially because you said you're a huge Almost Famous fan, so you might like it even more than I did.
All right, awesome. You ready to hop over to our next topic in Netflix?
I am. We have a cosmic connection coming up here, Joe.
Yeah. Speaking of Elvis Presley, Priscilla Presley has been cast to voice herself in Agent Elvis, the animated Elvis-centric show where Matthew McConaughey is voicing Elvis, and that is premiering March 17th. Any thoughts on Priscilla Presley voicing herself? Does it make you feel any type of way about what this show could be?
It makes me feel good in a way. You know, we've had a lot of stuff come around where it's like something about Mike Tyson, but he's not a fan of the way it shows him. Something about Pamela Anderson, but she's not a fan of the way it shows her. And at least this is a sign that it's you know, the family's in. You know, they're in for Elvis the movie, and that turned out to be pretty cool and fun and still ambitious and crazy and weird. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this can still be cool and fun and ambitious and crazy and weird. So yeah, I think it'll be fun to see her play herself, and I'm sure it'll be not a huge role, but it could be fun to see, you know, the real life connection there. I wonder if she's gonna be like his commander, you know, if she's gonna be giving him missions or something like that. I don't know.
Yes, I think what I read is she's only gonna be in a handful of episodes, so I think it's gonna be like he goes on missions and then comes home like to her or something.
Yeah, that's probably the, because I wouldn't expect it to be a reoccurring major character, but someone you pop up here and there for the fun connection.
Yeah.
Are you excited for that show, Joe? Is it going to be the Cocaine Bear of Netflix shows?
It's one of those shows where I think it could be great. I think it could be fun. I think it could be like the next BoJack Horseman for Netflix. I wasn't like a big BoJack fan, but it was definitely had a large following. Or it could be one of those shows where people watch the first episode and are like, this is garbage. This is horrible. And we forget about it by March 18th. So...
yeah, I'm definitely curious how they go with it, because the BoJack comparison is definitely where I was looking at, and I love BoJack Horseman. I'm one of the people that you can count among the huge cult following, you know, and I think what brought me into that show was that, sure, it was funny and it was absurd to see animal people, but it also had a genuine heart to it. It had a lot of really kind of complex character working as it was going along, and you ended up taking it a little bit more seriously than you thought you were going to take it, and I wonder if Agent Elvis will do that, or if it's just going to be, isn't it crazy that Elvis is doing spy missions?
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, I don't want to say fear, because I'm not going to lie, if this show sucks, I really don't care. Like, it's nothing I'm setting, you know, it's nothing I'm sitting by the TV waiting for March 17th to be able to watch this show. I think it could be fun, I think it could be great, but if it's not, I'll move on with my life, you know?
But, curious, they cast her, like, what, a couple of days before... a week before the show comes out?
Yeah, I love how they, like, especially how news articles word this. Like, Priscilla Presley cast. No, she was probably cast a year ago, at most. And they're just now announcing it as a way to market the show.
That's true.
All right, you ready to talk about the one thing on Netflix you watched this week? Probably one of the
I am ready to talk about it. One of the biggest things they've dropped maybe all year?
Yeah, this is going to be the title of the episode until the John Bernthal news dropped.
That's another big story. Forgot about that one.
All right.
I watched Chris Rock's live performance. I thought it was, you know, it was mostly interesting because I do like comedy. You know, I wasn't opposed to watching Chris Rock comedy, but I was more interested because it's like, you know, Netflix is doing live shows. How's it gonna go? Is there gonna be a crash in the middle? You know, you want to be there for the drama, you know. And there was no drama. The picture looked great, the sound was great, and everything once again looked awesome on Netflix's end. So I'm excited to see them succeed in the live streaming space. Amazon's doing well on that. So, yeah, I'm curious what the feature is for live streaming. Talked about how Amazon's going to be doing the football game completely free on Black Friday. And I'm wondering if Netflix will at some point be like, oh, let's do our Chris Rock special completely free. You can come on our app and watch it live for free. If you want to watch it on repeat, you got to sign up for Netflix. But if you want to watch it live, come over here and watch it live. And that could be something they're making like an event out of Netflix. And I think that would be kind of cool. As we're competing in the streaming space, it's one of those ways that any platform can make themselves stand out for a night. You know, everyone's going to go watch it on live on Netflix and not watch something on Amazon, not watch something on Hulu, because they want to watch it live. And I don't feel like Chris Rock's special had that level of appeal where it was like, you got to watch this live because you got to see what Chris Rock's going to say. You got to see what crazy stuff's going to happen. And he did obviously talk about the slap, which was what I think people tuned in to see live. But yeah, I'm wondering what their next thing is going to be. And I hope it's something that is more like an event, you know, because live comedy is fun, but I feel like it should be something where people are tuning in because they really want to see what's going to happen as it happens type of thing.
Yeah, I'm curious. I was going through trying to remember what all streaming services have had live events. Hulu, obviously, like they were the first one. That was their main thing. I don't believe HBO Max has.
HBO Max, I believe, has done some World Cup games.
Yeah, they do women's soccer. That's their live thing. Amazon Prime has Thursday Night Football. Netflix, obviously, the Chris Rock special. Disney Plus did that Elton John concert live, and they do Dancing with the Stars live as well. Apple TV Plus does baseball. So, yeah, I think every streaming service has now done at least one live event.
And HBO Max, now that I'm thinking about it, a year or two ago, they did a big live event where they streamed for 24 hours straight. It was on this big island with Dude. It was a spinoff of the Jude Law show that was going on at that point. And they brought the cast to the island and did a 24-hour live stream with Jude Law in character. That was a really cool thing for HBO Max to do. I'd love to see more stuff like that. And the fact that I thought it was awesome and no one else probably even knew that happened is probably a sign of why they're not doing stuff like that. But I liked the special, though, and it was definitely fun to see him bring up the slap and talk really candidly about that event just a couple of days before the Oscars, because you know that's going to be on every single person's mind at the ceremony. Everyone in the audience, everyone on stage is going to be thinking about, am I about to be slapped? You know? And it was nice to say Chris Rock got to be the one with the first word, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm curious how the cult conversation goes this weekend.
Yeah, it should be interesting. The Oscars are going to be I'm surprised he didn't do it like the Saturday night before the Oscars when peak slap talk, you know, when the slap talk was at its peak. I think that would have been the best time to do it. I'm very curious to see how Oscar night goes, and I believe that it's going to kick us over to Disney Plus, unless there's anything else you wanted to say about Netflix.
That's all I've got for Netflix.
All right, so the first...
I will say that the second half of the season of You is dropping, I think either like tomorrow or the next day or two. I'm going to be trying to get through that by next episode, so I'll at least give you guys my thoughts, no matter how far I am along on that last half of You.
All right. First bit of news, we have Peter Pan and Wendy trailer dropped over the last week. Basically, live-action retelling of Disney's Peter Pan. You got Jude Law as Captain Hook, and pretty much from there, it's a bunch of no-names. Oh, Yara Shahidi, who people might know from Blackish and Grownish, is playing Tinkerbell. I'm not going to lie. It looked better than I thought it might. Is it amazing? No. Is it going to be groundbreaking? No. But I think as far as Disney Plus original movies, it could be fighting for that 2 or 3 spot. I think it's going to be hard for someone to beat Chippendale Rescue Rangers, like, weirdly enough. If you had asked me, hey, 5 years from now, or, you know, if you had asked me at the launch of Disney Plus and someone said, hey, 3 years from now, you're going to say the Chippendale Rescue Rangers movie is going to be the best movie to come out of Disney Plus. A, I would expect the state of Disney Plus movies to be worse than what it is, which is somehow weird, and I never thought it would be because the Rescue Rangers movie is that good. But it looks decent, you know? And for these live-action remakes, it's about the best you can ask for at this point.
Yeah, I'm not excited for this one. Turn my brightness all the way up, and I still could barely see that trailer, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to buy a new TV to watch this one, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Look, I mean, I love Peter Pan. I love Neverland. I love that whole story. It's a lot of great, you know, one of my favorites, honestly, of the Disney classics, you know. So I always wanted to fly away and go to Neverland and even just be able to fly around London like that. You know, it's of my most favorite of Disney's classic animated movies. So I'm going to watch this for sure, and I'm probably going to enjoy parts of it because I've missed most of these live-action movies, but this is one that I'm going to watch.
Yeah. All right, some other news. We have Miley Cyrus's Endless Summer Vacation is coming, I believe, March 10th, which is essentially going to be her doing performances of the songs off her, technically upcoming album or recently released album.
It comes out the 10th. Within the next couple of days.
Yeah, so it might come out the same day. So yeah, she's just going to do backyard sessions of the songs off her album. So if you're a Miley Cyrus fan, you're definitely probably going to want to be checking that out.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm not a huge Miley Cyrus fan, you know, but I'm not against Miley Cyrus. I have a lot of songs that I like from her. And some of these Disney live shows have been really good. The Taylor Swift one was great. The Billie Eilish one was all right, you know, so I'm curious how this one's going to land on that. If it's more towards the Taylor Swift thing where it was like a behind-the-scenes look, not just performing the songs, it was kind of like a look at the story behind them, the art behind that song, you know, and I felt like that was something in the Taylor Swift documentary that really enhanced my enjoyment of those songs and that music. And for someone like Miley Cyrus that I'm not super experienced with, that could be something that really opens up my eyes. And I think, you know, those are better songs than I thought. Or, like, I might go dive into her music more than I thought that I would. But if it's just her live performing the music, that's not going to be something that I think reaches out beyond, like, her already there fans.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah, I get that. We also have Wilmer Valderrama is producing and starring in a Zorro reimagining from Game of Thrones writer Brian Cogman. Honestly, this is the kind of thing I'd be into, and I think it'd be super cool, except for the fact that it's Wilmer Valderrama starring. I just feel like he's not anyone I would cast for a reimagining of Zorro, but what are your thoughts? Do you feel differently than me?
Yeah, Wilmer Valmorano, like, I don't not see him, I guess, but it's just not in the list of actors I would pick. You know, if I had like 100, he might not even be on there, but that might, you know, I would have said that about a lot of actors who ended up turning in great performances. And I think it's interesting too, because he's not just the lead, you know, this was like his idea. He kind of like came up with it and pitched it and wanted it to happen, you know? So I think the fact that his passion is behind it and like, it's kind of his idea for the story and he sees himself in that story, I think that could really work. And I think the outside casting of it could be something that helps and really turns in a great performance, because you're coming in there with kind of a negative expectation and maybe you get something like Christian Bale, you know, as Batman, or Heath Ledger as a Joker, where all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, they cast against hype and it was great, you know?
I mean, that's possible. It just has me nervous. I heard about the story and I heard about the writer and that they're doing a reimagining of Zorro on Disney Plus, and I was interested. And then I saw that Wilmer Valderrama story, and it kind of
When I saw it was Wilmer Valderrama, I was like, that can't be the same ones. I had to Google it because I was like, wait. But you're right. I mean, yeah, I think it's an out of the box casting, but that honestly makes it kind of more interesting, because they could have gone with the top list of the fan cast and gone and picked that one, you know. Yeah, but this makes me feel like they have something they're going for with it, you know? So whether it's good or bad, they're at least going for something specific, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah. We also have John Bernthal has been officially cast as Punisher in Daredevil Born Again. And they also announced with that Deborah Ann Woll and the actor that played, what is his name? Foggy Nelson are not returning. So, kind of, what's your thoughts on, hey, we're getting John Bernthal back, but hey, it's going to also be on Disney Plus as the Punisher, and also Foggy Nelson and is not returning, though.
Yeah, I'll start with the Foggy and Karen not returning. I think it's a loss, because I think they were a good human part of that story. You know, I think it's always, when you have these superhero stories, you want to have those human characters who are there to be like the reality and keep that show grounded, especially something like Daredevil. But I also think we got to keep in mind, like, just because they're not in this doesn't mean they're not going to ever be in anything, you know? Like, they might not be in this Daredevil Born Again arc they're doing, but if they do another season of Daredevil, if they have Daredevil pop up in a movie, I could see them coming back for it again, you know? I think it would be more weird if they recast the characters, though, because, like, if you're going to bring in the characters, why exactly would you recast them, you know? I don't think these actors are exactly, like, super busy, you know? So I don't know why they wouldn't bring them back if they were planning on using the characters again, you know? So I think they're, just because they're not here doesn't mean they're gone, you know? But I do think it makes me wonder what the focus of this show is going to be. You know, we have a lot of names in there. I don't imagine this is the only member of the Netflix crew that shows up. I could see Jessica Jones showing up and making some appearances here or there. So this is going to be their chance to relaunch the Defenders, and I guess they don't have the Foggy Nelson in their new Defenders lineup. So we'll see how that goes. I'm curious, Punisher joining on Disney Plus, I don't know, you know, because they say they want to push the envelope, and then we get stuff that, like, kind of pushes it, but not really, you know, and I think this is a show where they don't want to go for the R rating, but they do want to push it a little bit, you know, and I think this is their chance to show what they can do, what their limit is, especially with the Punisher. Like, I don't think he's going to be going on mass violent murder sprees exactly to the level he was doing in the show, but I think they're going to be able to push to whatever Disney Plus's limit is, and we're going to see what that is in the show now.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious on that. What do you think they're going to do as far as, like, the Netflix universe of it all? Do you think they're going to just say, hey, the Netflix universe is the MCU, or do you think they're going to kind of,
I think they're going to say,
don't think about the fact that some actors played parts in the main MCU and the Netflix, or are they going to say that was an alternate universe, this is the main universe?
I think they'll just say, oh yeah, the Netflix shows happen, but let's never mention any plot points or any characters that ever were on them. Yeah. You know, they're just going to act like it happened without having to actually acknowledge it ever happening, you know? In the way that, like, when Kingpin came back for, well, what show was he even? Hawkeye, he was kind of the character, but he was, like, a different version, you know, almost.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it feels like they're going to, if you squint, the Netflix shows happened, you know? But I don't expect them to necessarily, like, go back and bring up plot points from the Netflix shows again. But I can see them bringing back characters. You know, I don't see why Jessica Jones can't pop up here and there for episodes and things like that, just to see who works. But I do know Kevin Feige in particular is very, very invested in this Daredevil show. He really likes Charlie Cox's Daredevil, particularly wants him to be in the Kang Dynasty Secret Wars arc, he really wants to be pushing that character as, like, you know, him as the kind of leading force of the Disney Plus universe. So I think they have big plans for Daredevil, and all of these characters joining him are going to be kind of the supporting characters of Daredevil. I don't expect there to be a Punisher show anytime soon, but I can see Punisher being a reoccurring supporting character on Daredevil.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all very possible. I feel like it'll be very much... I think it could potentially be more of like the alternate universe, like the very specifics of it are alternate universe, but the bare bones, kind of if you watched the shows 2-3 years ago when they first aired, kind of what you remember is what happened to the Disney Plus characters. But I could see them saying like that's an alternate universe, but the overall kind of arching story is kind of what happened in the Disney Plus MCU.
Yeah, I think especially because once they get the Secret Wars, they're probably going to reboot all the continuity in some way or another, and it's not really going to matter what happened or it didn't happen.
Yep, definitely. All right, and the last bit of news for Disney Plus, Jeremy Renner, his show Renovations is going to... we had the trailer drop for Disney Plus, and did you watch this trailer?
I did not watch the trailer, no. Did you watch the trailer, Joe?
I did watch the trailer. So essentially what the premise of this show is Jeremy Renner has bought these old public works buses. Some of them were like city buses transporting people around. Some of them were fire trucks, basically just large city works vehicles. And he's now repurposing them for the communities they once served. And along the way, there's like different celebrities coming in and helping them, but they're renovating a bus. Like, one is going to be transported into a portable rec area. Like, there's a basketball hoop on the back of the bus, and basically like a mobile rec center is what they called it. Another one is in India, I believe. I could be wrong. But some Asian, some part in Asia, and it's going to be a mobile water filtration center, so basically they can somehow tap into this area's water supply and filter out the water. And essentially, yeah, it's just Jeremy Renner and his crew renovating buses to help communities in need.
That sounds like an enjoyable show, you know. It's especially with Jeremy Renner's current like medical situation, I'm sure that's going to be nice to watch him in a happier state and a better time in his life. And yeah, I'm definitely going to check this out. I like Jeremy Renner. You know, he seems like a really, really nice guy. And just watching the trailer, it seems like he's really enjoying himself. And it's cool to do something nice, you know, in your docuseries, something that's, you know, actually productive for the community around you, you know? Yeah. I'm excited to watch this.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely looks fun, you know, lighthearted. It kind of reminds me back in the day, Extreme Makeover Home Edition. But now they're just going to, instead of move that bus, they're just going to renovate the bus, you know?
Renovate that bus.
Exactly. And there's something you watched on Disney Plus, I believe, last week. But like I said earlier, you weren't on because you had something else you were doing. And that's Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur, which is a Marvel animated series. Is this in the MCU? That's all I needed to know. It's a little girl and her dinosaur.
Something tells me not. You know, there's a couple of characters. Well, I guess they haven't, like, directly contradicted anything. You know, at least as far as I've seen, they haven't, like, had MCU characters show up and they're not the characters, you know. So it could be in the MCU, but... yeah, it's based off of these pretty deep cut characters, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, from Marvel Comics, and this has a very similar vibe and similar animation style to Into the Spider-Verse, where it kind of feels like a comic book page come to life and almost like living panels in a way. And it follows a young girl who's probably, you know, like 13 years old, and she's going out in her normal life. She's just kind of like struggling to live in New York. And then one day she activates a portal, and out comes this crazy horned talking T-Rex called Devil Dinosaur, and they decide to team up and fight villains. You have people showing up, some pretty big cast people showing up. Lawrence Fishburne shows up as a pretty recognizable Marvel, and I don't want to spoil even what villains are in it necessarily, but Lawrence Fishburne plays a pretty cool Marvel character as it goes along. So you have some recognizable voices that are going to pop up as some recognizable characters, as also as some deep cut characters too. You know, I didn't really know anything about Moon Girl, Devil Dinosaur, at all.
How could you not, man?
I didn't even know who they were, but I watched this show and it really made me kind of like this version of the characters. I'm sure the comic book characters are probably not even like this, but they could be. You know, and this is a really fun show. It's very kid oriented, so don't go into it expecting it to be like the Harley Quinn show or something like that. But it's definitely in the vein of Spider-Verse, and I'm liking it a lot. I think there's a second season and at some point, but the first season just dropped, so definitely check it out if you're wanting to get some nice fun Marvel fix. And it's better than some of the stuff Marvel, you know, I'm liking this more than I like a lot of What If, you know, so if you want to get some good Marvel animation in there, check this one out.
Sacrilege, man. Sacrilege.
I'm liking this, you know, more than some of the, even the Marvel live action shows, you know, get something cool in there, something creative that's out of the box like this with really unique and cool visual styles.
All right. And before we move over to our next topic of Hulu, me and Tristan, you're not caught up on The Bad Batch, are you?
I'm not caught up on The Bad Batch.
All right. You need to get caught up on The Bad Batch. Everything I'm reading is like this episode that's airing tonight / Wednesday is one for the ages. It's supposed to be one of the greatest Disney, basically one of the greatest Star Wars animated episodes ever. So I'm excited for that. But we did a Mandalorian special episode, so we're not going to be talking too much about The Mandalorian here. But for anyone that didn't watch our episode, and you should watch our Mandalorian review if you're watching The Mandalorian, what is your quick letter grade of Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 1?
Yeah, I'm at a B+ for Mandalorian Episode 1. Can't wait for Episode 2, and as the season goes along, that grade could go up. I'm really, really looking forward to what they do with Episode 2. I'm more excited for the show than I've ever been, as a naysayer for this Mando universe so far, but I'm nearly back in, so we'll see how next week goes.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I gave it a B+ as well. I'm excited for tonight's episode if you're watching, and if you've already watched the Mando Season 3 Episode 2 and you're now watching our show, well, I was excited to watch it, and I'm probably now excited to watch Episode 3. And going over to Hulu, there is something I watched, and I've been watching. I even watched some of it today, and that's History of the World Part 2. It's a 4-day event on Hulu where there's 8 episodes total. They did the first 2 episodes Monday. They did the second 2 episodes today. They're doing the third batch of episodes on Wednesday, and then the final 4 episodes on Friday. Mel Brooks was relatively involved. He obviously didn't write and direct the whole thing like he did with History of the World Part 1, the classic movie, I believe, from the 80s. It's a little bit different format. I was a little kid the last time I watched Part 1. But I believe in Part 1, I could be wrong, but I thought they went more linearly, like they followed the history of time. This one jumps around. They do similar, they go back to sketches over and over. It's just various sketches based throughout world history. A surprisingly large amount about the Russian Revolution. But it's very much a lot of your modern day comedic people that you would see in especially television. Nick Kroll pops up a lot. Ike Barinholtz pops up a lot. Seth Rogen is there from time to time. J.B. Smoove is there from time to time. Quinta Brunson was in a sketch. Zazie Beetz was in that same sketch. A lot of people that you may not even know their name, but you'll see their face and be like, oh, it's that person that I recognize. If you're a fan of Superstore or Parks and Rec, the actor that played Garrett in Superstore, he was also one of the pest control guys in Parks and Rec, is there for a bit. Wanda Sykes is there. I think if you're a fan of the first, or the fan of the original movie, definitely, I feel like it's worth checking out. I would say if you haven't watched the movie and you don't really know what it is, I would say like the closest thing I could compare it to is like Drunk History without some drunk person, you know, reciting a story from history. It's more just the people acting it out. It's not exactly accurate. It's just like funny sketches based around world history.
Would you say you could watch this without having watched Part 1? Because someone just be like, you know what, that premise sounds interesting, I'm going to jump onto this Hulu show. Or should they watch the first one first?
I mean, they're completely disconnected. You cut out a little bit there, but they're completely 100% disconnected. It's more just like that style of thing. There's no like storyline or anything that holds over. It's completely independent. It was more just kind of inspired by the first one.
All right, yeah, definitely want to check it out. I watched the first one a few years ago for the first time, and I enjoyed it, so I'm definitely thinking I like this one. I'm not, you know, I'm excited to see those TV actors pop up and stuff like that, because that was some of the fun of the first one, is like which kind of historical figures are going to pop up, you know. So I'm curious as the show goes along who they pop up and who they bring is in as the characters to make fun of and to sketch.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is they have Johnny Knoxville as Rasputin, and there's a couple times throughout the sketches where they'll just pop up and it'll be like the Jackass music, and it'll just say like Rasputin in the Jackass font, and it's just the guys from Jackass doing things to Johnny Knoxville as he's dressed up as Rasputin trying to kill him.
That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah,
I definitely will be checking that show out. Hulu, yeah. Hulu definitely needs me to watch something on there. You know, what am I paying for, Hulu?
Yeah, so the first four episodes are out now as of March 7th, 2023. And then the next four episodes will come out the next 2 days. So I feel like this is something Hulu should honestly be marketing more, because I really didn't know about it. And I saw it like looking for news for the show last week is when I saw that this was coming out.
Yeah, this is a big release and a big name, so I'm kind of surprised that Hulu wasn't pushing the fact that they have Mel Brooks back doing this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, and there was something you watched, or a movie you watched, that's currently on Hulu, and that's Triangle of Sadness.
Yeah, you mentioned the Oscars are coming up just this weekend, so I had to check off one of the Best Picture nominees here. I'd seen it before, so I rewatched this week, but I'm trying to get some watches in for all the Best Picture nominees and get myself prepped for Sunday. And this one, I liked it more the second time than I did the first time here. It's directed, I don't even have the guy's name, Ruben Östlund. He did The Square a couple of years ago that had a best international feature run and a bunch of festival wins and things like that. This one also had a pretty good festival run and is now nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, and Original Screenplay. So it has a chance to win something here at the Academy Awards. But the plot here is that it follows these uber rich people. This celebrity couple is a main kind of focal point. One of them is like this arrogant model, and one of them is kind of like an influencer type of person. And they are on this yacht for a extremely wealthy trip where they're going to be able to buy, you know, the top end of the food, the top of the watches are going to be for sale. You're going to be dropping, you know, million plus dollars on this yacht. And you kind of switch back and forth on perspectives between these privileged rich people and their yacht experience, and then the crew and the staff trying to make that yacht experience work. And it's very funny at times, it's very dark at times, it walks that line between sometimes being so gross and dark that you laugh because you're trying to cope for the fact that what you're seeing is just so disgusting on the screen. I had a good time with this. We've had a lot of these social satires recently where it's like, oh, the wealthy people are so ridiculous and class divide is so crazy. And, you know, they do some points in here where the class dynamic switches and the people who were at the bottom are kind of now at the top. And you see how that changes the dynamic of their personalities. And I felt like some of this was stuff that I'd seen before. You know, we've seen Parasite, and not to say that every social satire is a Parasite ripoff or something like that, but we've hit a point where it seems like every movie is starting to say a lot of the same things in that way. But I think what makes this movie fun is that it has so much fun. It's sure it has that social commentary there, but it's really trying to be goofy, and it's really trying to also make it out to be like neither side is necessarily perfect. There's a point where like Woody Harrelson is in this movie as the boat captain, and he is like a self-declared communist, and there's somebody else in the boat who is like this self-declared capitalist, and they start battling it out and arguing, but instead of actually quoting anything, you know, thoughtful or interesting, they just start drunkenly reading wiki quote to each other and quoting like random books and other articles, and neither one of them seems to know what they're talking about, even though they're so passionate and claiming that they know what they're talking about. So I think it did a good job of making fun of everybody in their own way. And there's a sequence in the middle here, which is a C6 sequence, where they serve some very flavorful food to the guests, and then hit some major turbulence on the waters, and there's this really elongated C6 sequence that's just like one of the funniest and also most disgusting things I've seen in a movie. Like, they truly hold nothing back in the way that they show this sequence, and the way the boat sways and the camera sways, I truly felt like I was on the verge of throwing up. So I felt like I had to give a motion sickness warning ahead of this movie, where I thought that was very hilarious. But if you don't think it's funny to see people throwing up all over their expensive dresses and all over their fine dining, maybe avoid the middle part here, the triangle of sadness. But I thought it was a really fun movie. Maybe not inventive or creative in a lot of its stuff to say, but a really great watch. And I had a really fun time watching this, considering how dark the material could be on the surface.
All right. Yeah, it's definitely one I should check out, obviously, if it's the best picture nominee, but I just haven't got to it. Being engaged in doing a bunch of other things sucks up your time.
That'll do it.
All right. Anything you got to say on Hulu before I move over to Apple TV Plus?
No, that's all I've got for Hulu.
Yeah, Apple TV Plus. Okay, I forgot to put this in the notes, but we got a trailer for the Apple TV Plus movie Ghosted, which is the third time Chris Evans and Ana de Armas are appearing in a movie together, and it stars Salt of the Earth Cole, played by Chris Evans, who falls head over heels for the enigmatic Sadie, played by Ana de Armas, but then makes the shocking discovery that she's a secret agent. And now I gotta add pop up. Before they decide on a second date, Cole and Sadie are swept away on an international adventure to save the world. So kind of when I saw the log line of like a person falls for a secret agent, I kind of thought it'd be role reversed where Chris Evans would be the secret agent and Ana de Armas would be just like, oh, the regular old girl. But the fact that it's flipped kind of makes it interesting. But the one thing I've noticed with Apple TV Plus is their shows are great, their movies all suck, and nothing really makes me feel like this will be different. It's from the writers of Deadpool, which was a movie I enjoyed, but it's nothing that was like makes me feel that this movie will be groundbreaking and incredible.
No, this trailer looked like hot garbage. I won't lie to you, Joe. I mentioned the Red Notice effect, you know, the Adam Project effect, you know, the Gray Man. This looks like it's going to fall right in that line where you get recognizable faces and you throw them against the green screen and you do some really, you know, first draft kind of dialogue through the script and then, you know, you just send it. And this looks like one where they just kind of hit send and yikes. Apple TV needs some better stuff than this, especially when you get big names. You should be making better stuff. Apple TV has been making great stuff. They had some of the best TV shows of all the streaming are on Apple TV. I would have liked for their first big flagship movie like this, people are actually talking about and watching, to not be a Red Notice type of dumpster fire movie. You know, they could have done something more interesting than this. You know, they're coming off of Coda, they're coming off of Tragedy Macbeth, and this is their contribution to 2023.
Yeah. Well, you know, what are you going to do? Coda was good.
Not watch that one, you know. I won't be watching Ghosted. I'm ghosting Ghosted, I'll tell you that.
All right, that makes sense. So moving over to Peacock, you watched some things that were kind of holdovers from last week. What are your quick thoughts on Megan Unrated? If you saw it, is it worth watching if you saw the first version, if you saw the original theatrical version of Megan, or what versions should I watch if I haven't watched either one?
If you haven't watched either one, you might as well put on the unrated version. They do change a couple of scenes here and there, but yeah, it's not going to be a hyper different movie for you. If you watch Megan, the rated cut, the no one in the theaters, and you were like, I don't like this, it's boring, you're not going to watch this and change your mind, you know. But if you watched it and you thought, you know what, I wish that shot had a little bit more blood in it, you know, or I wish that death scene was just a little bit longer, you know, you're going to get just a touch more of Megan doing some killing, you know. But to be honest, either version of the movie is fine. Whichever one you have your button clicking over, you might as well click on it. Because Megan's a good movie, a really fun, goofy movie about a doll that is given the command to protect her user at all costs. And she takes that command very personally, you know. So enjoy it. Check it out. It's, you know, we talked about Cocaine Bear. This honestly feels like it's hand-in-hand with Cocaine Bear, where it gives you what you see on the box and it gives it to you in the best way you can get it. So definitely check out Megan, whether it's rated or it's unrated.
All right. And then you also watched She Said on Peacock.
Definitely the opposite of something like Megan. She Said was a very tough-to-sit-through movie. I'm going to pull up the director's name. Maria Schrader is the director. I wanted to mention that because she directs this in a very interesting way. It's not showy. It's very, very dry and kind of like quietly well shot, you know. It's not kind of going for the big showy visuals or anything like that, but I think that fits for the story because it's about the investigating journalists who uncovered the sexual affairs of Harvey Weinstein, and they interview the victims, and it kind of follows the course of these two women and most of the movie is about them trying to get the victims to feel comfortable and safe enough to speak out. And I think if you are someone who's wondered, okay, if this happened to you, why didn't you call the police? You know, I feel like that is a reasonable question that somebody might ask. And I think this movie shows you why someone would not do that. It shows you the system of oppression and the mental manipulation and the gaslighting that would turn these people into being afraid to speak out on what happened to them. And I think it does a great job of putting you in that desperation of wanting this to change. But also you have the hindsight of knowing that, sure, Harvey Weinstein faced consequences, but the systems of Hollywood have not really changed all that much, you know? And I think that adds a lot of tragedy to this movie, where you see them struggling and really trying to get this story to break out because they're convinced it's going to change things, you know, that once this story breaks, Hollywood's going to have to hold itself accountable, right? And it did for a second, but we've seen the people who were held accountable as trying to stage comebacks, and a lot of them are working. And I think this movie is an important one to watch because it reminds you why we don't want to go back to that time in Hollywood, and why it's important to hold not just Hollywood accountable, but every industry. Because if this can happen to actresses, to have some of the most biggest platforms in the world can be silenced, you know, anyone can be silenced. And I think this is something to keep in mind and watch. So I definitely like this. I wish it would have had a better awards run, because a lot of performances here I think are worthy of some Oscar runs, but it wasn't, yeah, like I said, not nearly as showy as some of the stuff the Oscars like to go for, you know. So I'm not surprised it didn't get nominations, and I'm also not surprised that Hollywood was not ready to award this movie yet. Because
yeah, I was about to say, I don't know how well a movie that says Hollywood sucks and Hollywood's horrible is going to do well at Oscar night.
There's definitely some hypocrisy in the fact that, like, Brad Pitt and some well-known people are producers on this movie, but I think they ended up making a movie that does not shy away, does not hold its teeth back or its claws in, you know. So I definitely think it's worth watching, for especially if you're someone who is on that fence where you say, you know, why wouldn't they come to the police? Maybe they're not telling the truth. And why are you making, you know, what happened to innocent until proven guilty? And I think this shows you that there's a whole system of accountability. It's not just, oh, well, they said, so it's true. There's a lot that goes into making sure you don't just publish whatever somebody says, you know?
Well, I know Brad Pitt's been working against Harvey Weinstein since the 90s, so him producing that movie is probably the least shocking thing I've heard today.
Definitely recommend it, though. Yeah, really, really great. One of the better movies of last year.
All right, and then a little bit of news. Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, which a lot of people are calling the best animated movie of 2022, is going to be on Peacock on March 10th. So if you got kids, or you're just an animation fan, or maybe you grew up with Shrek and you want to go back to that world, check out Puss in Boots: The Last Wish on March 10th. You saw this movie, right?
Yeah, I saw it, and I went into it with, you know, low expectations. Not that I didn't think it was going to be good, but you know, I hadn't even seen the first Puss in Boots, and I like Shrek, but I'm not someone who followed all the Shrek movies after the sequel. And, you know, I watched Shrek 1 and 2. I don't think I watched anything after that. But I went and I watched this on a whim because I'd heard good things about it on word of mouth on Twitter and online, and I thought it was great. You know, it's a great exploration of Puss in Boots' kind of character arc, where he's gone through all nine of his lives. He's on his last life now, and he's trying to face his mortality. He goes on a quest to try and make a wish come true. He's going to wish for nine more lives so he can live recklessly like he always has. And along the path, he meets a couple of people from his past and his, you know, people around him who want their own wish. And you kind of watch Puss grow and faces his demons across this journey. And it's pretty predictable, but I think it has great animation, really unique style. I'm liking how animation is finally stepping away from everything having to kind of look like Disney and DreamWorks. Everything has kind of looked similar for a while on the animation front, and this definitely got out of the realm of normalcy in its animation. It has kind of this watercolor look to it. You know, it feels like it was hand painted. You know, it really cool visuals, and I definitely recommend watching it while it's streaming. Because yeah, like I said, if you have family and kids, are gonna like it. But I have, you know, no kids, and I actually got a good time out of it. I got pretty struck up in the action and the adventure, and there's actually some heart, some emotion when you see Puss having to face his mortality and realize he might actually, you know, for real be having to die like anybody else, you know.
All right, yeah, definitely. Hopefully I'm going to check that out before Oscars come out, so I'll do my best to do that.
Yeah, I know that people are saying Pinocchio is the front runner by a mile for the animated feature, but I'm hoping for an outside win here, especially because the word of mouth has been so strong on this movie at the last second here. I could see it having that. The Oscar voting ended like yesterday or the day before, so maybe it could have had that last second push.
All right. And you ready to move on to our main topic now of Mount Rushmore of time travel movies, or do you want to do MVP of the week first?
Let's do our MVP. Let's do our MVP first.
All right. So it's going to be a struggle because we could talk about who was everyone talking about the most this week. And for me, my nominee, if we were going to go that route, would be Chris Rock. But everything I saw online, I don't know if that was exactly positive talk. So I don't know if I necessarily want to give him MVP for that. I know we gave MVP of our kind of Mandalorian episode to a Grief Karga / Carl Weathers. But are we saying he's the MVP of the week as well? Or do you have any thoughts as far as MVP of the week?
Interesting. You know, how do you feel about a Mel Brooks MVP nomination? Were you moved enough to put the old guy in there?
Because I feel like no one's talking about this show. Like, I feel like it's hard for me to give MVP of the week to something that I feel like I may be the only person in the world that's watching.
Do you want to give MVP of the week to... oh, boy. Look, it's a rough week. I watched a good amount of stuff, you know, but let me think about some standouts here. You know, Puss in Boots, has he been the MVP yet? We got to get some love to the Puss.
Nah, because this hasn't even dropped yet, and it wasn't even like a mainstreaming thing. It was just kind of a thing that released. I'm scrolling through everything we watched, Consultant. You know what? Nah, that's not really... Peter Pan trailer.
Look, you know what? I'm going to say it because this week's episode of The Last of Us, it did so well. And let me pull up the director, see if he has anything, anything we can say. Look, you know, we don't exactly do research all the time before we start this. For some reason, the MVP is the thing I forget about until you mention it, and I say, oh, yeah, you are right. We could give it to the director of the episode, I suppose. He was able to carry The Last of Us to new heights here this week, literal viewership heights. Ali Abassi,
the director of this episode of The Last of Us. You know what? Why not? The MVP for the week of March 7th, 2023 is... Ali Abassi, director of the most recent episode of The Last of Us.
I believe he's also directing the finale, so he's got a double feature coming up, you know.
Way
so.
To crush it, you know.
And he did crush it, you know, that he's brought us to that pretty powerful moment of The Last of Us and one of the more iconic scenes, and it was one of those moments where they came and touched on with the game. You know, they've done changes and they've branched out, but then they came back and they touched base here going into the finale, so I can't wait to see how he wraps it up. The ending of The Last of Us, I think I mentioned before, is kind of a touchy subject. A lot of people have different opinions on how it goes and how they feel about the characters' choices and what they make, the calls that are made by the end of the season. So I can't wait to see how the season portrays that visually and how the viewers walk away feeling. You know, is it still divisive or do people come away definitively feeling one way or another about characters and what they do at the end of the show? I can't wait to see how it goes, and now we're going to be waiting way too long for season two, so I don't want it to come too quick.
Yeah, I get that. All right, you ready to move on to our final topic, the Mount Rushmore of time travel movies that are currently streaming?
I am ready. It took me a bit to get through this because we had the hesitation of not wanting to repeat streaming platforms, right? So it was a struggle for me to not put in some stuff that I really wanted to put in for. And especially like when you have time travel movies, I feel like there's definitely one that has got to have a spot on there, so it's really like you have a top three, you know? There's a spot that I feel like it kind of locks for at least a form of a movie, you know? So I'm curious what you picked, but yeah, how we do this is that we don't just do our favorite top four, you know? We kind of want this to be like the four that we think cement the genre or cement that moment of history or whatever it is. So let me say time travel. For me, I wanted to kind of capture the wide variety of time travel movies and the genres and the tones and the way that time can be traveled, you know. So I put a lot of thought into the ones that I picked. So I'm curious to see what you picked.
Yeah, definitely. Like, especially, like, you're not going to see sequels on here, right? Or not, like, necessarily a sequel, but you're not going to see the original and the sequel on this list because while those two could be the best two time travel movies, they both kind of cover and represent the same thing. And also, before you message us, hey, why didn't you have this movie? Why didn't you have this movie? Check. Make sure they're actually streaming first. But if you see there's a movie that you think, hey, this movie's on Netflix, this is on Disney Plus, this is on HBO Max, this is on Hulu, and you're like, this should have been on your Mount Rushmore, this covers this section of time travel movies, which is a big version of time travel movies, tweet at us at The Hand Plus. That's at THEHANDPLUS, and make Elon Musk some money. So I will go first. I'll give my first movie, and if it's on your Mount Rushmore too, we can both talk about it and kind of lock it in. If it's not on your list, I'll talk about it, and then you can go and give one off your list. But I'll just kick it off with the Mac Daddy of it all, the movie that if ain't on your list, I'm throwing your list out. And that's, I don't want to say the original time travel movie, but when you hear time travel movie, it's the first one everybody thinks of, and that's the 1985 classic Back to the Future, currently streaming on Peacock. Marty McFly, Doc Brown, I could say more, but I don't need to. Is it on your list?
Of course it's on my list, Joe. Look, this is among my favorite movies of all time. I've seen this so many times. It's like a perfect script. Everything kind of ties up and pays off so well, you know. And when we talk about the rules of time travel, we cite Back to the Future, you know, as an example of at least one type of time travel, you know, where Marty McFly can go and he can change the past and he can change his future, and it has that butterfly effect kind of thing where, you know, I love Back to the Future, and I think the fact that time travel is like built into the plot, you know, it's got to be on this list. And hilarious, two of the best performances probably ever in a movie, you know, between Marty McFly and Doc Brown. But iconic characters, forever characters. They could remake this if they wanted to, but they're not going to touch it, you know. It's too good.
Yeah, the director and writer of this movie basically are who have, I guess, the, I don't want to know if the rights to it, but essentially they're not allowing a remake or sequel or continuation as long as they're both alive. But yeah, there's two kind of rules to time travel movies. There's Back to the Future and then a movie that would have been on my list if it was streaming free anywhere, and that's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. There's kind of the butterfly effect of Back to the Future, and then there's the kind of it always could have happened of basically time as inevitable of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Would have been on my list if it was streaming, but it's not. So I had to go a different direction. And one of the movies, so obviously we have the classic go into a time machine and travel back in time version of time travel. This is more of we are staying at one point in time and something is traveling to us. And that is the classic horror film directed by James Cameron. That is The Terminator, currently streaming on HBO Max. I want to say it's not normally, I guess, what people would think of when they think of time travel movies, but in my opinion, it is a time travel movie, and it is one of the all-time great time travel movies. And I thought to represent kind of the, hey, something is traveling to us version of time travel movies, there is no better version of that than the Arnold Schwarzenegger starring James Cameron directed Terminator.
I agree with you in some ways, Joe. I agree with all your praise for Terminator, but I'm going to take all that praise, Joe, and I'm going to move it over to Terminator 2 Judgment Day, because I put T2 on my list.
Okay.
It was literally like such a perfect movie. It takes the time travel of the first one, and it's like, what if something came to us, and then something also came to hunt that thing that came to us? And you got to fight in the present to save the future. You get to actually see like the post-apocalyptic future that we're fighting to prevent in some more detail. And yeah, I think Terminator 2 is like a perfect action movie, and I love that it takes the time travel concepts of the first movie and escalates it to being even more crazy and like, okay, what would the future robots look like? They're going to be kind of like this morphing metal that can go through holes and stuff, you know. I think it leans into the time travel even more than the first movie does and gives you like the best ending to a movie ever, you know. You save the future, it's the biggest hype moment ever, and that final monologue about like, oh, you can change the past, the future is not written in stone, you know, I feel like that's the moral of all time travel movies, you know, like you feel hopeless against the forces of destiny and the forces of time changing you, but you can change that and you can take control of your life and you can change things. And yeah, I love Terminator 2, and I think it's the embodiment of what time travel movies can do.
All right, I'm gonna say this right now, Back to the Future obviously on both of our lists locked in. I always like, for something like this, I always prefer to put the original, but I do prefer Terminator 2 over Terminator. So I think we can safely say, it's not really a concession, but I will concede. And I think we can safely lock in Terminator 2. Is that also on HBO Max, I believe?
It is also on HBO Max. I had the same thought process as you, but yeah, I felt like Terminator 2 went way more in for the time travel stuff, and I personally like it more.
All right, yeah. So I think we can safely say lock in Terminator. So we have hop in a time machine and travel. We have something time traveling to us. And I thought, what if we moved through time just differently because we were in a different space? And this is a movie that I remember walking out of thinking this is going to win its director, best director at the Oscars. And I was wrong because I don't even think they got nominated. But this is the Christopher Nolan directed, Matthew McConaughey starring Interstellar, currently on Paramount Plus. It's not kind of like a normal time travel movie, but Matthew McConaughey does travel through time because he is out on space. He's experiencing gravity different than those back home. So for what is for like a few months or a few like a year for him was decades for the people back home. Spoiler alert. And I think it's a different kind of time travel movie. I really love this movie. I think I love it a lot more than most people. And, you know, this isn't the world's Mount Rushmore. This is my Mount Rushmore of time travel movies, so I had to include Interstellar. But I'm gonna assume, Tristan, it's not on your list. So what's something unrelated to Interstellar that's
on your list? Not on my list, but unrelated to Interstellar, I have one that... Well, it's related to Interstellar in an interesting way because it's directed by Christopher Nolan, but I think I cheated a little bit. I'm going to make a case for you, Joe, because I want to make a case on why this is a time travel movie. I want to hear your argument. You know, it is not Tenet.
Oh.
I'm making an argument here that Memento is a time travel movie because the character.
Can I mute your mic? It's not a time travel movie. You're not going to.
The character might not time travel, right? But I think metacontextually, the audience time travels, right? Like we're moving backwards in time along the single timeline of the character, so it's kind of a time travel movie, right?
It's not a time travel movie. Nothing travels through time. Except for normally through time. Like, okay, by that logic, Forrest Gump is a time travel movie because he travels through time at the rate of time.
Look, I mean, the audience travels through time, though.
At the rate of time, just backwards, because they thought it'd be the more interesting way to tell the story.
Look, I will say, Interstellar, awesome movie. Incredible movie. I was blown away by that movie when I saw it, and it's might be my favorite of Christopher Nolan's movies, and I'm definitely happy to put it on the list because I think it's a great movie, one of my all-time favorites. And I have another movie coming up on here that I think tells a different way of looking at time travel, but I also thought about 2001: A Space Odyssey because that is much like a predecessor to Interstellar. Yeah. You know, I feel like Christopher Nolan took a lot of notes from 2001 and brought it into Interstellar, but I like Interstellar a lot, almost just as much as 2001, and I'm good for going Interstellar with that because I think Interstellar leans more into the time travel. 2001 does time travel similarly, but I think 2001 has a lot more fun, or Interstellar has more fun with it, you know, the bookshelf and the all of that stuff where I have a great time rewatching Interstellar because all of that time travel stuff connects so well.
All right, and I will do the last movie, and that's Interstellar's on Paramount Plus. So we have hopping in a time machine and traveling through time. We have something through time coming to us. We have kind of traveling through time by just going into space and existing through the universe differently than everybody else. But what we don't have is just magic or weird unexplained forces we can't explain causing us to travel through time not once, not twice, not three times, but thousands upon thousands and potentially millions of times living the same day over and 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 over. And I'm only saying that again because my phone shut off and I had to click it back on. And that is Groundhog Day currently on Hulu. Like I said, it's maybe not your prototypical time travel movie, but he is traveling through time as he lives the same day over and over. And it's an all-time great movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I watch it on repeat every February 2nd at my job in our showroom. I turned it over to, I believe, TBS or it was AMC that was airing Groundhog Day over and over. And I played it throughout our whole showroom all day. Fantastic movie. Great movie. Groundhog Day.
I agree with your pick, Joe. So much the fact that my fourth pick is also Groundhog Day. I don't mind you repeat you, but I feel like maybe that's in theme with the movie we picked, right?
Yeah.
I love Groundhog Day. Every year, or I've actually made the trip up a handful of times to Woodstock, Illinois, where they shot Groundhog Day and they do a giant Groundhog Day celebration every year. There's a great time. So a few hours away from Chicago if you're out here in the area, but it's definitely worth a drive at least once or twice so you can see, you know, the town hall and the square and all that stuff where, you know, Bill Murray got to relive in Woodstock over and over and over and over and over and over again. So yeah, I love Groundhog Day, and I feel like when you talk about the Mount Rushmores of time travel, we talk about Back to the Future because that's something that everyone cites as like a type of time travel, right? And I feel like Groundhog Day is something everyone cites as, you know, a Groundhog Day scenario where you're doing the same thing over and over and over again. And people have done that before, but I think this movie was such a fun take on that that it has become, you know, the definitive idea of repeating the same day over and over again.
Yeah, definitely. I'm surprised we had the same this much crossover. The only movie that basically we had the same movie three times. I mean, we differed on Terminator and Terminator 2, but then the one that was different, we had the same director. So we had near identical lists, and this is obviously all for 65, the Adam Driver movie that's coming out this weekend. So check that out, and maybe this will get added to the list of Mount Rushmore. Maybe it'll kick one of these off. But were you surprised as I was that we had this much repeat?
I was definitely surprised. I knew we'd have a couple of repeats, you know, but I think we'd repeat essentially the whole four. There were a few that I wanted to get in. You know, I thought about trying to get Prisoner of Azkaban in there because I feel like that's a pretty definitive idea of time travel and type of time travel, but it was on Peacock and so was Back to the Future. So I was about to remove Back to the Future so that I could get Harry Potter on there. You know, I thought about adding Superman as kind of like that MacGuffin time travel, but it was on HBO Max. I didn't really want to get rid of Terminator 2, you know, so I was trying to play the game a little bit to keep the big hitters on there. But yeah, I'm excited to do another one of these and hoping that in our future Mount Rushmores, we can fight a little bit more. You know, we had a couple of fights here, but I'm still going to win you over on Memento, though. Memento, time travel movie. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I had Endgame for a while, but I'm like, what does that really represent, you know? And when I was looking at the other movies on my list, I'm like, I like the movie, but is this on the same level as these other movies? And it's like, no, not really. And then what is it even representing as far as time travel movies? So I took it off, and I think Interstellar is what I slipped in there.
Yeah, definitely a lot to choose from. But in the end, yeah, it was hard not to have a couple of these on there. Yeah. So it was one of those categories where the Mount Rushmore is pretty set because you have some pretty big hitters.
Yeah. So, yeah, just to wrap up real quick, the Mount Rushmore of time travel movies currently streaming is Terminator on HBO, Terminator 2 Judgment Day currently streaming on HBO Max, Back to the Future, which is currently on Peacock, Interstellar, which is currently on Paramount Plus, and then Groundhog Day, which is currently on Hulu.
Great lineup. I figured that'd be close to what we had, you know. A lot of classics in there for sure.
Yeah, a lot of different types of movies, a lot of classics, a lot of bangers. All right, anything else you got to say about our show before we wrap up? I don't think we have a main topic next week. I think we're taking a week off, and then the week after I will look up really quick to see what we are doing. Give me 1 second. So not next week, really don't have a main topic, but the week after, which will be our March 21st episode, we are doing top 10 action movies because of John Wick 4 coming out that week. So,
and I'm sure next week we'll have enough to talk about if something goes wrong at the Oscars. You know, someone's going to slap somebody. Someone's going to storm that stage. You know, it's going to happen. It's got to happen.
Yeah, we figured between potential streaming Oscar wins and the finale of The Last of Us, we had enough to talk about. So, yeah, definitely look out for in 2 weeks we're doing our top 10 current streaming action movies. And before we go, Tristan, I got one question for you.
Oh no, what is it?
Would you rather see Sigmund Freud played by Taika Waititi or Joseph Stalin played by Jack Black?
I feel like Taika Waititi as Sigmund Freud would be very, very funny. He could play that like tightly wound, you know, really, really into his mother type of character. I could see it.
All right, well, I'll tell you, you don't have to choose because you can see both of them on History of the World Part 2, currently streaming on Hulu. And with that, our show is over. See you next week. If you got anything you want to say to us, talk to the hand.